Buddy, I'm Tammy Douglas Schatz. I'm the Human Resources Director for the county, and we do have an agenda to go through today, and we thought that it would be helpful to your panel if I went ahead and facilitated the agenda, and we'll go ahead and get started, and I'll just walk you through everything. We'll have lots of time for questions and for discussion. So the first order of business is call to order. So this meeting of the Clerk Recorder Review Committee is officially called to order. And we'd like to start with the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This meeting is being recorded and will be posted, and our clerk today is Mike Milby from Human Resources, and he will do the roll call.
Vicki Jansen, not present. Lee Price.
Here.
Ken Hampion.
Present.
Chuck Bell.
Here.
Marcia Torgerson.
Here.
Rita Neal.
Here.
Tammy Douglas Schatz.
Here.
Wade Horton.
Here.
Thank you, Mike. And just for your information, Vicki Jansen did have a family emergency, and she's unable to join us today. However, she is confident she'll be able to join your panel for your deliberations on the 20th. And we'll make sure that she gets this recording and the materials and gets caught up to speed. So our first order of business now is a public comment period, and we will have 1 minute for each public comment. And we'll first take public comment on matters that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the committee, but not on the agenda. And it looks like we have one speaker, Julie Rodewald. And Julie, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. I'm Julie Rodewald, and I'm representing the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. The County Clerk Recorder touches the lives of every resident in our county, not only through elections, but through a myriad of duties, including vital records, fictitious business names, and the recording of property documents. It is imperative that the leader of this department has a demonstrated commitment to public service. The League urges your committee to carefully consider the experience of each applicant and recommend only those who have held proven leadership roles, possess directly related experience, and most importantly, have demonstrated that they can carry out the duties of the clerk recorder in a nonpartisan manner demanded of this position. Thank you.
I don't see any other public comment slips. Is there anyone else wishing to make public comment on matters on the agenda? Okay, we'll close public comment and move on. So this is a regular meeting, and this is our first regular meeting of this group. And we'd like to start off by introducing our County Administrative Officer, Wade Horton. And he's going to share his view of the position with the panel.
So good morning, Wade. First of all, thank you for being to sit on the select committee panel. It's very important for our community, and I appreciate your time. I'd like to share with you some of the leadership principles that I feel as a CAO is important for this position, not only as a clerk recorder, but also as a department head, because this person will be a member of our department head team and the county leader. First of all, this person needs to demonstrate utmost integrity. The ability to has a strong moral compass and will do the right thing, particularly in the face of intense scrutiny and public pressure. And for this role, it's absolutely necessary. This person has strong convictions and will do the right thing. Number two, teamwork. Teamwork is absolutely essential for this role. Somebody that can motivate and lead a group of people that can leverage the respective talents of their team to achieve an objective, and most importantly, someone that can actually, that will actually care for each individual of their team. We're living through some very difficult times right now. We have a divided community, we have a divided state and a nation, and this person needs to be somebody that can bring a team together and focus on the objective. Somebody that can motivate their team to get things done, and then someone also that will hold their teammates accountable and course correct when necessary. And the third, communication. It's essential that this person be highly skilled communicator. Someone that can clearly articulate their intent to their team. They can clearly describe the end state for their objective, and then again leverage the respective talents of their team to achieve that objective. Also, someone that can communicate with the public. Communication is the foundation of relationships, and the relationships is the foundation of trust. And this person must be seen as somebody that the public has trust with. I'll just close with this. This is not a position for somebody to have their first experience with leadership. I think it's very important that this, whoever the board selects, has established a proven track record of leading a team. I also think it's important that this person has established experience in a clerk reporter's office. I think this isn't the time to learn on the job. This should be a subject matter expert. It's actually a working department head that's down in the trenches with their team. And I think in order to be successful with this role, experience in the subject matter expertise and also leadership is absolutely essential. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. The rest of our agenda is listed here. Rita Neal, our county council, will be doing a Brown Act overview. I'll be covering some of the background on this position and the process that we're going to go through. We're going to have time to go through the binder and answer any questions, and then any time that the panel would like to talk amongst themselves, and then we'll adjourn for the day. So that's our plan. So I'm going to turn it over to Rita to talk with us about the Brown Act.
Good morning. And I'm going to just give a brief overview of the Brown Act, because as you all know, this is a Brown Act committee. And probably the biggest minefield for a Brown Act body is to avoid unintended meetings where you're talking amongst yourselves. So just want to do a quick overview. The Brown Act, of course, governs our meetings that are conducted by legislative bodies, and you were considered a legislative body by virtue of being appointed by each of you were appointed by a member of the Board of Supervisors. So the intent of the Brown Act is that your actions are taken openly and your deliberations are conducted openly. That can be uncomfortable sometimes for people, but it's really important that you do express your thoughts and opinions on this committee so that, as Wade said, we get the best candidates to move forward to the board. There are certain exceptions to the Brown Act where things don't have to be open and public. This committee won't have the need to address any of those exceptions because you won't be going into closed session. All deliberations and discussions will be open and public. Just talked about that. Okay. So the purpose of the Brown Act is to facilitate public participation. So another thing we have here is we have members of the audience who are allowed also to engage in the process and give public comment. And this also avoids what they call secret legislation. So starting with open and public meetings, and that's the first thing we're doing here today. This meeting has been noticed. It's a congregation of the majority members of the legislative body. And just because Vicki Jansen's not here today, we still have a quorum and you can still act. it was a little awkward in putting together the agenda because the subject matter jurisdiction of this committee is very limited. You're to discuss and deliberate over applicants for clerk recorder. So even on the agenda where we had the ability to give public comment on items not on the agenda, and then to give public comment on items on the agenda, they're really one and the same in this instance. Most bodies, that isn't quite the same situation. But because you are a subcommittee with very limited requests by the board, that's your subject matter jurisdiction. Again, your subcommittee, because the board appointed each of you. Okay, violations of the meeting rule, and this is kind of where is the minefield when it comes to the Brown Act. We have to notice this meeting. We have to talk to all of you at once. If any of you were to go to any informal gathering, say the three of you tonight end up at a cocktail party, it would be inappropriate for you to talk about anything having to do with any of the applicants for this process, because that's three of you talking and you're actually having a meeting, and we have to notice that. The easiest minefield to go through is what's called a serial meeting, and this is a series of communications which involves less than a quorum but ultimately ends up communicating to all the members. So perhaps Ms. Price has a discussion with Mr. Hampion about what you thought. Mr. Hampion then discusses with Mr. Bell, even though there's two of you, and he tells you what Ms. Price thought. We've just had a meeting. So that's a serial meeting, particularly then Mr. Bell, if you then talk to Ms. Torgerson. You've talked about the subject matter jurisdiction without the public. And so that is really, and when I say it's an easy minefield to go through, because it can often be unintentional. If you're focused today on this and you leave and you're thinking about it and you happen to run into Mr. Hampion on the street, hey, how'd that go? That went fine. Just don't say, hey, what'd you think about candidate A, B, or C? Any of that is not going to work. Serial meetings, communications prohibited. There are times where there's exceptions to the meeting requirement. Again, probably those aren't going to apply here because you really have a short length of time in which this group will be together through basically the month of September. So we're probably not going to have social or ceremonial events. If you attend community meetings, if any of you attend a community meeting, happen to be at the same meeting, say, for the city council on some issue, you simply just can't talk about any of the issues that we discuss in regards to this selection. Teleconferencing, for example, Vicki could have teleconferenced today, and what we would have had to do is set up a location where she was with the address of her location, and then members of the public could have met at her location. That wasn't necessary, she wasn't able to do that, but that is another way that someone can come to a meeting. One sort of, I don't know if I call this an exception, but you are still permitted to have individual discussions with staff members. So the three of us here, we've had discussions with some of you. I know the HR staff has communicated with each of you. So it's very actually important, I think, to have individual communications with staff so you kind of get the lay of the land. If you have any questions about the process, that you don't ask today, you leave here today and you're like, I meant to ask something, just feel free to contact one of us instead of contacting your colleague. That will keep it a lot easier. Public participation and opportunity to speak. Again, I touched on this, it was public comment. And we've had public comment already. We have to give public comment either at the beginning of an item, during an item, or before a vote is taken. And usually what we do here at the county is we take public comment before any further discussion on the item. That's what we did today. Again, this is all people allowing public participation, which is one of the foundations of the Brown Act. Again, I talked about items of interest to the public and items that are not on the agenda. reasonable regulations. And there, again, really isn't any need for this body to have rules of procedure. At the Board of Supervisors, we have rules of procedure, sets out how long people can speak, sets out the kind of conduct we expect, sets out how motions are made. We're just going to be able to walk you through some procedural issues. It doesn't seem really necessary to have your own regulations. If somebody gets out of hand, we'll deal with that too. Again, you can't prohibit a speaker from criticizing you. So if, say, at the next meeting, a public comment comes up and somebody either criticizes a candidate or criticizes one of you, you get to sit there and just listen to it, and we allow for those people to criticize the public and the public process. Voting, and we won't get to voting and deliberations until the next meeting, but all votes and all deliberations of this body will be public. And again, that's why I say you kind of have to be prepare yourself to express your opinions and your thoughts out loud, so that everybody understands and the public understands where you're coming from, what your thoughts are on any particular candidate. We're not going to take secret ballots. Sometimes you might see at a Board of Supervisors meeting or other commission meetings where they'll do straw votes just to see. Those aren't really official votes, but those are done in public as well to kind of see where the body is. So any action that you take, I would assume at your next meeting, or if we have to go in for go to another meeting, that vote will be in public. And then lastly, agendas. And this meeting was agendized per the Brown Act. And we generally have to agendize 72 hours ahead of time. It's been on HR's website and also posted for the public to see so that any member of the public can attend. If we violate the Brown Act, there's some pretty serious remedies that can be had. An interested person can invalidate an action. Usually, if there's a violation of the Brown Act, the person has to require that you correct the action before they can file litigation against you. So somebody could try and do a cease and desist that you no longer violate the Brown Act. They get an injunction from any action you take. And then if we lose on litigation against Brown Act violation, then we'd be subject to attorney's fees. The last bullet point I've never seen happen, at least in our county, but if there's an intent to deprive members of the public and violate the Brown Act by a member of the legislative body, you could have criminal charges filed against you. I don't put that there to scare you, just it is one of the items listed in the Brown Act, so just to be aware of it. So thank you for participating in this open and public meeting. And again, I'm thankful for all of you and your time today. So if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yes, Mr. Yampion.
Thank you, Rita. Appreciate the overview. Just a hypothetical, since this is the time to get that sort of thing out. Speaking for myself, the supervisor appointed me was Supervisor Ortiz Lay. I've never actually met her in person. I've had one telephone conversation with her, which is when she asked me to do this. And I accepted with the understanding that I would perform the work completely independently, you know, with a mind of just getting the board what they asked for, the most qualified people. But hypothetically, if we each consulted with the supervisor who appointed us, say we got down to 10 applications and couldn't figure out which 5 to recommend, if we consulted with the board members who appointed with us about that, am I correct that would be a Brown Act violation?
It actually wouldn't be a Brown Act violation. It would be a Brown Act violation if, say, you consulted with your supervisor,
yes,
and perhaps Ms. Price consulted with the supervisor, and then the supervisor went and talked to Mr. Bell about what the two of you thought. So I think what you're talking more about is keeping a body in, you're being independent. So you're a separate body from the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
And what we're trying to avoid is two more of you or two more of the board members from discussing an issue.
But if more than two board members weighed in on what we should bring to this process, wouldn't we just be proxies for a board decision that was not notified in public?
So, yeah, so I think if your question is if the board member says to you, hey, Mr. Ampion, I really want you to look at candidate so-and-so, and maybe that same board member says that to Ms. Price and then Mr. Bell, absolutely, that would be a serial meeting that you're all being directed. So it, you can each, if you choose, talk to your individual supervisor. Again, with a lot of, like, Parks Commission, Planning Commission, many of those commissions try to be independent of what their own supervisor wants them to do, but they don't have to be. They can talk to their own supervisor, but they can't talk to others.
Well, I mean, everybody, I guess, has to bring their own ethic to this, but, you know, I think Wade laid it out really clearly. This is a really politically fraught time. There's a lot of politics, and I think we have the opportunity to hear to do what we usually do at the professional level when we're screening applications, and that is to set all of that aside and focus entirely on the applications in front of us and getting the most qualified people to the Board of Supervisors. Once it gets there, you know, fair game for them to do whatever they want with the process, but it just seems to me that a lot of interaction with the board members who appointed us or getting their opinions on what we ought to do has some risk to it, and I would hope we can resist that and just bring our own judgment, nonpartisan, look at professional qualifications.
Yeah, and I think if you go back, if any of you watched the board meeting where the board decided to create a committee, they were very clear that they wanted an open and transparent process,
right,
and they wanted this committee to, you know, independently look at the applications. Now, they didn't set rules of who you could or couldn't talk to, but so I'll leave that judgment to you. One issue that reminds me of is, and we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, is conflicts of interest. Now, there's legal conflicts of interest, and then there's kind of the appearance of a conflict of interest. So legal conflicts of interest usually have to do if you have a financial interest in a particular decision. The best example is a board member owns a house and there's a new development going on near the house and the value of their house is going to go up. If they vote on that item, they probably have a financial interest. The second type of legal conflict of interest would be what we call a government code 1090. So if you vote on a contract where you have a financial interest in that contract, perhaps it's your husband who has a business that wants to contract with the county. That's a conflict of interest. There's what they call a common law conflict of interest, where may not be a financial conflict of interest, but perhaps you have a significant other, you're not married to that significant other, but if that significant other has a contract in front of the board and your relationship will be improved because you support that particular action. That's kind of what they call a common law conflict of interest. They're much more difficult to prove. And then the last type of conflict, which is not a legal conflict, but it's really an appearance of a conflict of interest. And this goes to a very personal decision for each member of the committee. And in looking at this last night, for example, if you know one of these candidates really, really well, your best friends or you socialize with them, you have to really ask yourself, can I look at this application and this person in an unbiased manner and equal and give everybody the same chance from the same starting point? I can't answer that for you. You haven't seen who the candidates are, the binders in front of you, but you'll have to make a decision as to whether you can be an unbiased decision maker. That's not a legal issue. It's really, we call it an appearance of a conflict of interest. And I often have board members at times say, you know, I don't really have a legal conflict, but the appearance of this conflict, I'm gonna recuse myself. So if at any time you see a candidate and you're concerned, and again, offline, you can ask me or Ms. Schatz if, you know, to talk it through. It ultimately has to be your decision, but it is something we're used to talking to elected officials about in terms of an appearance of a conflict.
Yeah, my career began over 45 years ago in county HR. And, you know, any interview panel I was on or even application screening panel over the years, and there's been a bunch of them, the expectation you know, the HR department's coached was, if you know somebody, and you know in this small county, odds are we know people who are in this process, then you should disclose it, describe the nature of the relationship to your fellow panel members, and then indicate whether you feel you can be an objective rater or you needed to step back. In some cases, you might know someone, maybe they're a neighbor who lives four doors down, but you think you can be objective, or maybe there's someone who even works in your workplace, but you think you can be objective. It seems to me that maybe the important thing for us to do is disclose those things and share with others why or why not we think we can be objective.
Any other questions about that?
Yes,
Lee Price. I had a question about public comment, and thank you for the overview. Thinking about the meeting on the 20th of September and perhaps on the 21st if we still need to meet, I'm just curious if we were to get public comment from a candidate that's included in the packet and that we are considering, would you advise that participant to keep their comments limited to the process and not on their own particular qualifications or reasons for making application?
Yeah, you raise a very good question, one we've talked about internally, is it is possible that we allow candidates wanting to speak and give public comment. We would suggest to them that they keep it to the process, and we certainly can't force them to keep it to the process. But if that is the desire of the committee, that if any candidates come, we could say, you know, we would prefer that you keep your comments to the process. But again, we can't prevent them from speaking to their own application.
That's helpful. Regarding the notice of the meeting, particularly the one on the 20th, are candidates on notice of these meetings? Might they show up with an anticipation or expectation of being heard?
So they are on notice in terms of we publish the agenda, we've made, I believe the media has asked for the dates. So just like any other agenda that we publish, we post outside the building, that's considered sufficient public notice. We aren't required to give the applicants this date and this time because they're considered members of the public as well. So they are certainly free to come to the next meeting, or even when you send the applicants to the board. The board, I think, is set to discuss on October
12th. Yeah.
So the applicants are free to come to the board meeting at that time.
And so one further question then, if I could. So the process outlined to potential candidates when it went out, you know, here's the announcement, was the screening review committee's process included in that? Would there be an expectation by anyone that provided an application for the position, would they have that date on their calendar? And would it, I'm just wondering if it was part of the HR announcement process.
Thank you.
For the October 12th or for
no,
the,
for these meetings.
For these meetings?
Uh-huh.
I know that we provided the agenda to anybody who asked and then it was mm-hmm. posted. I'm going to have to ask staff. Thank you.
Yes, so candidates were, the notice that was sent to candidates is actually, if you look at the job description, it is in your binder. Mm-hmm. We gave them a general outline of what this, what the next steps were going to be. So September 1 through 30th was when the committee was going to be convened. They were not given specific dates of when the committee was going to be convened.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that if candidates appeared and there was an expectation for those who wanted to participate, that others who may not have known that this was part of the process, and if they had known, they might have shown up as well. I'm just wanting to kind of lay out some fairness, if you will, and that's really helpful. Thanks for
yeah, and that's fair. One thing that also the board indicated was this committee is not been set up to interview. You're simply
right.
To review the applicants. The finalists that go to the board will be interviewed, and that has been made clear to the applicants as well. So
Thank you.
Sure. I would concur with that. I was going to say our role isn't to interview people, and so I don't want to meet them or interview them. I want to do what I've been asked to do and look at the application and make a decision based on that. So maybe when that meeting comes and there's any candidates here, it could be said by you or someone that we're not wanting to hear about them as a candidate. You know, that's not our role, and that's not going to help them. In fact, it might hurt them if they try to be interviewed, even though, you know, I mean, that won't.
Yeah, so if this committee desires at the next meeting that if there are candidates here, we make it clear your preferences is that they only, if they speak to process. And again, we can't stop them from, you know, speaking to their own application, but certainly we can tell them the committee's preference.
Do you want a straw poll of us now or later?
Sure,
or?
You can, yeah, you want to. Is that, I mean, we could take
direction. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I realize you can't control what people say, they have their time, but I would agree with Marcia that, you know, we should, and Lee, that we should ask them to talk about the process, but not to make presentations. If they do, we're not really considering that. We're considering what we've been asked to do, what's on paper. So I would agree with that.
Mr. Bell?
I have no problem.
Okay. Great, we can make that clear at the next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay, we'll move along. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the background and orient you to your binders. So this is probably known information to you, but our clerk recorder vacancy was announced for July 2nd, 2021. And that set into motion the requirements of the government code for the Board of Supervisors to appoint a person to fill the vacancy for the remainder of the unexpired term. So the person who is selected by the board in October, that appointment will expire on January 2nd, 2023. And on July 13th, the Board of Supervisors provided direction to us about how to proceed in this selection process. So they appointed each of you to the committee and asked that you review applications and recommend up to 7 candidates to the board to interview on October 12th. This is the timeline for the recruitment and the process. So Miranda from Human Resources mentioned the recruitment materials, and I just want to point out to you in your binder that you do have those for reference. So the first page is the agenda, but after that there is the County Clerk Recorder recruitment announcement and supplemental information that we asked of candidates, so you can refer to those when you're in your application review process. There were 45 applications received. All 45 of those applications are in alphabetical order in your binder. A couple days ago, we had one of the 45 withdraw. That person's application is still in your material, so you know who that person is. They're at the very back, and it says withdrawn on the top. So you'll have 44 to look through. Human Resources has already confirmed that all 44 in your binder meet the minimum qualifications that the election code requires. That is that they're 18 years of age, that they're a citizen of the state of California, and by the time of appointment, they have to be a resident and registered voter. So that isn't something that we could confirm because it just has to happen by the time of appointment. So you'll know that the elections code is met with all 44 of these candidates. So here we are with your first committee meeting, then we'll deliberate the 20th or 21st, and then the board meeting will be October 12th for their interviews.
So Tammy, you haven't in any way designated those who actually have clerk recorder experience from those that have maybe zero government experience, period.
We have done no sorting at all, but I do have some sample suggestion of how you could sort, and then we can talk about what your panel might want to do to sort through them. So your job is to pick up to 7 candidates to send to the board.
Before those candidates go to the board, we're going to do a background investigation so that the Board of Supervisors is aware if there's anything that might prohibit someone from serving. This is a list of our background investigation process and everything that we'll be confirming. So you don't have to worry about this stuff. It's just for your information, and that way we don't that way we make sure that the board will be able to appoint someone that has passed a background investigation.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, please.
So one of the things that Mr. Horton really emphasized is the importance of leadership and team builder, someone who can build trust, good communicator, all of that. I mean, we're not, sometimes you can pick up that stuff in an interview, but we're not interviewing, we're just looking at stuff on paper. Backgrounding is another opportunity to get at those characteristics. Do you call previous employers? Does the county's background go into, I guess you'd say, the softer skills versus just, you know, criminal checks and internet searches, that kind of thing?
So probably the closest that a background comes to checking soft skills is that reference checking process. And that includes, you know, anything that someone has posted or what people might have to say about them. That's certainly imperfect and pretty surface level for executive level skills. So we will be relying on whatever somebody has in their written materials and then the interview process that the board goes through to verify that they think someone is fit at an executive level. So I want to walk you through a sample process for your consideration on how to evaluate candidates. So first, you know, this is just a sample process, and I just want to reiterate again, we aren't here to direct your activities. The board asked you to do this. So the sample that I'm presenting, you can use as is, you can make some minor adjustments, you can throw it out and come up with your own. What HR put together was a qualitative process, so not a lot of numbers and calculations, but just to use your overall judgment of the candidates, and I'll give you an example of how we think you can best do that. So the beginning of this process is pretty simple, and I think probably everybody does this automatically, but a suggestion would be to go through all 44 and just sort them into, yes, I want to consider this person further, no way, or maybe. And I did go through these applications myself. Just from my experience, I don't think you're going to have trouble doing that. I think that you're going to be able to sort them pretty quickly. So in your binder, there is a sample scoring criteria. It looks like this. I think it's right after, before tab B. Do you see it? It's right after your selection committee contact information, and it just says September 2021 screening criteria. Does everybody see it?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So what we did is we considered what the job is, and we wrote down a high level of what the role of the job requires and what duties the clerk recorder will be performing, so that you can compare what someone wrote in their application materials to the job they'll actually be doing. And so first and foremost, a typical executive in the county has a bachelor's or master's degree, so you can consider education in your screening. We also wanted to make sure that you had a high level view of what it takes to do elections work and clerk recorder work. So the elections part of the job, we have written down here at a high level of just managing and conducting elections. So someone who has overseen election processes, has managed election processes, understands the legalities and mandates of elections. Those candidates would most likely be effective in the role if they've already done this role in the past. So you can review that criteria against what people wrote in their applications. We also included effective communication and written communication for speaking in public. And as you can imagine, for a clerk recorder, that's important. In the clerk recorder arena, we identified kind of the core duties that if someone had done these duties in the past would most likely make them able to just hit the ground running if they were selected for the position. So this is experience issuing licenses, filing notaries or other fictitious business names, overseeing staff that does that, experience with recording property documents or other vital records, preparing and monitoring budgets, making presentations to a governing board. So those are the clerk recorder duties. On the next page, we've got executive leadership that Ken was referring to. So these are important components of executive leadership in the county, and they match what Wade described earlier. So, we're suggesting that you look at the application materials and see if anyone has experience being an executive, serving as a department head, managing 22 and a half FTE, managing people who need leadership and support with all of the county expectations of staff, and making sure that you're helping them become a team, stay a team, and executing on projects. So just all of those components that make a successful executive, hopefully people who have that experience have put that in their application materials. Some other criteria that you might want to consider that is helpful is just, you know, how well did the applicants present themselves in their materials? What, you know, was their writing professional? Was their application thorough? Was their cover letter and resume to the level of what you would expect of an executive in the county? And then finally, we just gave you some helpful notes, and many of you, or maybe all of you, have had to go through applications in the past. So a good way to think about application review is consider how long somebody did job-related work. How in-depth did they do that work? How recent was that work? So someone who was an executive recently in a job-related field, you would think would be able to jump in quickly. They don't have a long time to serve before this position is up, so you'll want them to be able to start right away managing the operation and serving as the clerk recorder. So our sample suggestion is that after you go through your yes, no, maybe piles, that you take all your yeses and you compare the application materials against this criteria, see how closely each applicant's experience as they present it is related to this, and start, you know, getting to your top seven. When you get to your top seven, we are suggesting, just a suggestion, that you use this very simple rating scale to help you clarify to yourself very clearly, so that you can clarify to your fellow panel members of why these candidates are your top candidates. So let's say you're going through your candidates and we're suggesting you simply screen them on these different areas on a 3-point scale, that you cannot recommend, you recommend with reservation, or you recommend with no reservation. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you have a candidate who does have experience working in elections, And you, they didn't run an elections office, but they've done a lot of elections work. So you may consider that. I would recommend them, but I have some reservations because they have experience, but not executive experience. So you might give a 2 under job-related elections experience, but maybe a 1 for executive leadership. Another example is, let's say you have a candidate who is doing the exact same job as the elected clerk recorder in another county. You might be able to recommend them with no reservations. You give them 3 across the board. So it's not really meant to be a scientific quantitative exercise, but just an exercise to help you get your thoughts in order. So what our hope is that you will take these materials home with you over the next, until the 20th, get your 7 in order, know exactly why you want those 7 so that when you come back on the 20th, you'll be able to dive into deliberations.
Tammy, just question.
Sure.
Can this screening criteria rating scale sheet be provided to us electronically or multiple copies of it?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Burn up too much printer ink, right?
my little tiny home printer is not quite.
Yeah, I don't want you to have to do that. No, we're happy to provide electronically, yeah.
I think this is very helpful. Thank you for putting it together. I don't know Mr. Bell's background, but I do know Lee's and Marsha's, and they have a ton of experience in actual clerking, and I'd just like to hear from them what you think about the experience and maybe, what we should be looking for.
Thank you, Ken. I'll go ahead and start. Lee Price. I really appreciated the comments of Julie representing the League of Women Voters and Mr. Horton, your introductory comments. As someone who has worked my entire career as a city clerk, a municipal clerk, appointed not only by a city council, I have been an elected elections official. I think it's just really critical that we be looking for someone who has, and the word has already been used, demonstrated experience in conducting an election at all levels, because this is a working department head. It's someone who has to know how to do every single job as it relates to conducting the election. And I always said that I'd be willing to do anything. If it's running the copier at 2 a.m., okay. If it's sitting down and helping a tired employee finish a task, yeah, that's what it takes. So the person that is going to hold this job needs to know all aspects of it. And as Julie mentioned, this is also a position that does more than conducts an election for the County of San Luis Obispo. There are documents that are recorded every day, and there's a whole division there. There are many other mandated duties of the clerk recorder. And so I feel that whoever sits and takes this job, even on the interim basis, needs to be somebody who can hit the ground running, who needs no training in election law, who has direct experience in California election law. I mean, I haven't looked at the applicants. I don't know if we have anybody from out of state, but this position needs to be filled with somebody who knows the job already. There's no time to train. Because the clerk recorder is the department head and it is a working position, he or she cannot just rely on the knowledge and expertise and experience of his or her staff members. And this needs to be somebody who has a well-rounded understanding of how elections are done. Consolidated elections, what does that mean? It's different than standalone. How do we run a special district election versus a municipal election, statewide, federal? I mean, there are just so many laws that change every single year. And when I was a working full-time clerk, a lot of my first few months of the year were just catching up on what got changed in the last legislative session.
So someone who already has a good, solid background in election law, the conduct, what, you know, the actual nuts and bolts, if you will, of conducting an election, and then has to stay current on changes that are made by the legislature each day, each year. And that's not only in the election arena, it's also in other aspects, you know, public records, Brown Act. There, you know, many, many changes each legislative session on document recordings, and what does that look like? And we have new fees, and how do we implement those fees? So I'm just thinking that, you know, what we're looking for is, again, somebody that can just hit the ground running, doesn't need any training.
Well, probably not much I can add to that. I agree with everything she said. I also was elected city clerk for 20 years, so I'm very aware of all of those portions of it, but also talking about the elections and for the public trusting that the elections are being done properly. Part of a city clerk or a county clerk is communicating with the public about what's happening within the city or county. And I agree that you need to have someone who can, knows the job and can do the job and knows what has to be done, but also can relay that confidently to the public. And I really like the screening criteria that I've gone through in my career many application processes and going through, and I did the same thing, yes, no's, and maybes also. And but having a list here of, to remind me, because that was one thing I had asked, I think it was Miranda on my email, was more information about, because I know everyone thinks of the county clerk as an election official, and they are, but they do a lot more than that, and I wanted to make sure we aren't just getting someone who's an election whiz and someone that doesn't know the rest of the job. So it is important to get a well-rounded person, even though it's a temporary position, so to speak, hopefully. I mean, I was elected each time also, so it's very possible if this person is good at what they do, they'll want to run again, and they'll be here for a long time. But I think pretty much concur with what she said.
And I'd like to add one more, and you sparked my thinking on this. Clerk recorder, as already has been stated in the outline, needs to be somebody who can think fast and speak clearly right on the spot. You know, oftentimes, I always felt like the clerk should be in the background, and that's where most of us want to be. We don't want to be in the limelight. But in the event that one must be in the limelight, you know, the person needs to be calm, collected, speaking as a neutral representative of the county, and even a little further as that neutral, impartisan elections official that's there to just ensure that the election process is conducted with integrity, with transparency, and he or she can articulate that on a moment's notice with a camera, you know, mic thrown in your face. You got to be ready to provide a articulate response. And I think that the public trust is just so, it's expected of the clerk recorder that this is going to be somebody you can trust when he or she says, yep, this is what's happening, or we need a few more days, we should have it done by the end of the week. You know, we want to know that we can believe that person.
I'll add one more thing, I'm sorry, but it's for everybody else too, that just reminded me also, when the election portion, when you're dealing with candidates who are running for office, like in this case it would be for Board of Supervisors, that's a big job, being able to manage people that are running to maybe be the boss of everybody. So dealing with them and guiding them through the process of running and pointing out, you know, pulling them back on that leash when they get out of hand sometimes during the election process, trying to keep them out of doing the wrong thing. But being able to have that kind of a relationship with people that might be Board of Supervisors in the future or whatever is something that not everybody does well. So you want to make sure that you have someone that does that too. So that's all part of that same thing, being able to be that person that can guide those people and be respected by them if they get elected afterwards.
Well, I'll just comment. I appreciate all the comments that have been made, and I think they're all highly relevant. I think the outline that you provided is a good one for us to work with. And it really touches on the important things that a candidate that we recommend should score well. I bring a totally different perspective and experience to this. I've been an election lawyer exclusively for 45 years. I've advised two secretaries of state in this state and have practiced election law probably in 40 of the 58 counties. So I've had quite a bit of contact with elected, for the most part, county clerks and election officials in that context. Not so much in the other functions of this job, because those are different from county to county, but when I've been in front of them, it's been in connection with election-related stuff. So many of the things that you've said, I think, are quite apt in terms of interaction with the public. I'm concerned about the integrity of the process. I'm concerned about the division and in the country and in the county over these election matters, and I think that's an important part of this as we go through it, looking for candidates who can be presented to the board for their selection. And many of these factors that you've represented in this, I think, are ones that also would be mindful of, the board would be mindful of consideration. So I think this invests our responsibility as an important one to give them good picks.
You bring up a good point about nonpartisan. You know, with the way the world is, a clerk, whether it's city or county clerk, needs to be nonpartisan. No one should know how you feel about politics. They shouldn't know how you're registered to vote or whatever. That you should never say anything that would let anyone know how you actually feel or how you're going to vote. That's not your job. You need to be nonpartisan. That to get the trust of the entire population, you need to just do the job, follow the law, and not use politics and all that's important.
Can I ask you another question? This is great material. The overview is great. Very helpful. But I'm wondering just, you know, how much can you say about what you're hearing from the staff and the clerk recorder's office now, what they need most out of this interim position? There was a letter that one employee wrote to the Board of Supervisors, so it's a public letter, and if people don't have it here, everyone should get a copy, I think, from one employee, Ms. Bessant, I don't know, Bessantz, I think. And that's one person's opinion, so I'm not saying it represents the office, but for me it was kind of eye-opening to read some of what was in there. But from your perspective as managers here in the county, overall 22 and a half employees, what are you hearing they feel they need most out of an interim clerk recorder?
That's a great question, and I think I can address that confidently. It's proven leadership and subject matter expertise.
Great, thank you.
I have one question, and that is, from the 22 plus full-time employees you have, how do they spread between elections responsibilities and other responsibilities?
So correct me if I don't get this spot on, but the bulk of the folks are considered administration that can work. They support both functions. There's around five FTE that are dedicated to elections, and then there's a couple FTE that are dedicated to special funded projects. Did I get that right?
You're close.
Okay, yes. All right. That was all off the top of my head.
So. Yes, I'm just confirming that right now, but that is, I'm very, very impressed, actually.
It's around there.
It's around there. I am familiar a little bit with how they do switch hats as well, so there's a lot of versatility in that office. So within that office, you are seeing people who need to be subject matter experts in their own area, but are also needing to pick up, similar to what Lee said, pick up and take the run with something should they need to in another area.
During elections, it's an all hands on deck effort, and when we're not in an election cycle, the majority of the folks are supporting the clerk function.
And Wade, could I ask you, you said five FTEs in election, and then I didn't catch the next, you said?
There's two? Two FTEs are special revenue funded, and they're working on, they work on specific projects.
Like what?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay, I was just curious. So Tammy, if I could then, and maybe your staff, so it sounds like the current staff have been cross-trained, so most of them can work in any of the divisions within
the cross-training is important too, because that allows us to have an economy of scale when we need it for the election cycle. Otherwise, we want to make sure we're right size for the department, so that cross training is really important. So when we're going through the elections, we can pull support from the clerk side into the elections and support the subject matter experts that are in elections with augmented support.
Thank you. We're happy to get that perfected and send that out to your panel. Exactly how people are assigned and what the special projects are. And that would be helpful if it could also include kind of who's next in the line of leadership, the deputy or
so maybe an org chart and
yes, okay. that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Okay, I think we are almost finished with the presentation. So September 20th, when we close out the meeting, I'll make sure to set that special meeting so that we can come back. And hopefully on the 20th, you'll be able to reach consensus on up to seven. You'll tell us who those seven are, and then we'll get them into background and get them set up for the board on the 12th.
Can I ask a question about that number? I mean, it would be a wonderful blessing if we have seven super qualified people in this group. But I know, you know, it's challenging under the best of circumstances, and we have a, you know, tough job market for employers and all that right now. And, you know, possibly some worries that candidates might have about the job, the politics, et cetera, et cetera. If we only find five or three that are really worthy of the board's time, because this will be very time-consuming for the board, I'm assuming you're not wanting us to force that number seven. I mean, just some comments about that to give us a sense of how hard we should work toward seven. Maybe we'll be lucky and it'll be harder to come down to seven, but maybe not. So I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I think that's a practical question, because the way we're looking up to seven, but if you certainly can't get to seven, and we're also conscious of the board's time, this process, and getting the most qualified people, that if you don't come up with seven, and we say to the board, this, you know, was their best effort, they ranked and then very, you know, strategic process to go about that, a lot of deliberation, and here's the three, five, whatever that they're sending to the board.
So I have that breakdown for you, just to follow up. So for the clerk recorder, it's 15.1 FTE. For elections, it's 5.35 FTE. And for the restricted revenues, it's 2.05 FTE. And those are, let's see, collect and utilize restricted funds, pursue modernization of delivery systems for official and vital records, preserving historical records, vital records for the county.
Okay.
So roughly two-thirds of the employees are working on stuff that's not elections related.
On a day-to-day basis.
Okay, that's helpful.
So that was the end of my presentation. We're happy to do more Q&A.
I think many of you may have been in touch with Lacey or Miranda, and they're gonna, of course, be available to help you, and Rita Wader, I are available for any questions you might have. And so, what else can we do before we send you on your way?
So we go off, we all do our homework, we come back, we all have our top candidates. How do you have a game plan for how you're gonna run it on the 20th? I mean, how do we do that?
Yeah, so what our thought was is that we just come in and ask everyone to say who their top seven are. And you never know. I mean, you might end up with the same exact candidates, or maybe you'll have four that are exactly the same, and all you need to do as a group is discuss three. So the board didn't ask you to say who's number one and who's number seven, so you don't even need to do that. You really just need to identify who the board should interview. So we thought that, you know, we'll just start and see how far apart you are, and then, you know, we'll just facilitate a discussion about, you know, candidate by candidate of who's still on your list until you can reach a decision.
And you might, as a, you know, you might direct as a committee that they're ranked in some way and that certain comments go. I mean, it's going to be up to the committee to sort of decide how you want to present these to the board. Because again, they didn't give direction that way. They just said, we want a committee to review it. So I think you might want to think about that for the next meeting and how, you know, as you deliberate, how you want us to present your recommendations to the board.
So yeah, so any of your, like if you write comments about them, we can provide those to the board. So help.
I mean, this is something you can talk about later, I guess. But if we're all unanimous about the top four, like you said, I mean, maybe that, and then it gets a little, you know, grayer for the remaining three, we could conceivably even communicate that to the board that these top four were all, you know, something.
Yeah, good point. Anything else?
Well, I want to thank you because I really appreciate how well organized this meeting has been, and I think you've given us a great start with our task, and I feel like I'm leaving here with a pretty good understanding of what's needed and wanted and what the task is and how to go about it. I was looking forward to seeing old friend Vicki. I've worked with her many years in her role working for Supervisor Ashajan and other things. Hopefully her family emergency isn't too serious. Are you going to sit down with her? And I mean, some of this she already knows, the Brown Act stuff and everything, I'm sure, but just how
we're going to make the recording available to her, and we'll go through not only our presentation but also your comments. So we took notes and we'll help her get organized.
And we'll be doing that on the 13th.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.
Meeting with her on the 13th, is that
what
you're
saying? She'll be coming to collect her materials.
Got it. Oh. I was going to volunteer to carry it, but I may need a courier to help me.
I know, it's heavy duty. Well, if we... Yes, thank you. Thank you, Rita. So Rita's reminding me that we need to close out the meeting formally and set... So I'll make a motion that your panel can affirm or hopefully affirm. I move that we schedule a special meeting for Monday, September 20th at 10 a.m. and then also a special meeting for Tuesday, September 21st at 9 a.m. Only if needed.
I'll second that.
Okay.
All those in favor?
In favor.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.